Chapter 10. Our next two visits went pretty much as the first one did. I picked up Miss Emma at her house at around 1:30. My aunt was always there with her, and after she had settled down into the back seat of the car, we drove in silence all the way into Bayonne. Each time we arrived 5 or 10 minutes before the hour. The food was searched. I was asked to take everything out of my pockets, then told to put everything back into my pockets, and we were led down the narrow, dark wood corridor, passing the open office doors where white men and white women carried on their daily routines. The deputy walked a step ahead of us, with Miss Emma directly behind him and me beside her. At the end of the corridor, we would climb the steps to the first landing, where the deputy would wait a minute to allow Miss Emma to catch her breath. Then we would continue on up to the next floor and through the heavy steel door to the cell block. The prisoners would hear us coming, and they would stand at the cell doors with their hands stuck out between the bars. As she had done the first time, Miss Emma promised that they could have the food Jefferson did not eat. As I had done the first time, I gave them the change I had in my pockets, which was always less than a dollar. Then we would move down the line to the last cell. Jefferson always lay on the bunk, either looking at the ceiling or facing the wall. Each time, the deputy opened the door and locked us in. Jefferson had no more to talk about the second or third time than he did the first, and after we had spent an hour with him, we were let out. Each time, Miss Emma left the cell crying, and both times she told the young deputy to give the food to the other children. On Friday, our fourth visit, I left Irene Cole in charge of the school and instructed her to let the children go at 3. If she felt that they had done all their schoolwork before 3, she could dismiss them early, because it was getting colder and most of the children would have work to do at home. I had to go down to my aunt's house to get my car. Then I drove back up the corridor to Miss Emma's. Usually she was waiting for me, but not today. I sat out there in the car a good 5 minutes, but no Miss Emma. I didn't want to blow the horn. I thought that might show impatience and disrespect. But still, no Miss Emma. The door was shut, and the only thing to give the place any sign of life was a trickle of white smoke rising occasionally out of the chimney. After sitting out there another couple of minutes, I put patience and respect aside. I pressed on the horn hard and long enough for everybody in the quarter to hear it. I had given up my class to take her to Bayonne, and she was not ready, and I wanted them all to know about it. Finally, the door did open. My aunt came out on the porch and pushed the door shut behind her. She stood there watching me. I knew that stand. I knew that look. I knew that she was not coming one step farther and that I would have to come to her. She still watched me as I got out of the car and came up the walk. I stopped short of the porch. "Something wrong with you?" she asked me. I wanted to ask that same question about Miss Emma, but I held my tongue. "Don't you know if she was able she would be out here?" "Then why didn't she tell me she wasn't going? I could be teaching my class." "Nobody said you wasn't going." "You're saying I'm supposed to visit him alone? He's no kin—" "Come on in here, boy, and get that bag," my aunt said. She watched me come up on the porch and go by her. Then she followed me into the house. Miss Emma was sitting at the fireplace in a rocking chair. She had on 2 sweaters, a black one over a green one. She had some kind of rag, possibly a baby's diaper, tied around her head. I stood in the center of the room near the hanging light bulb. I had the feeling that Miss Emma was not nearly as sick as she was pretending to be. For one thing, I had seen her that morning picking up chips in the yard, and she didn't look sick at all. And now I could smell fried chicken and baked potato, and I knew she could not have done all that if she was dying. My aunt sat down in the rocker next to Miss Emma's. Now both of them peered into the fireplace, at the 2 half-burnt logs that gave about as much fire as a candle would. Neither said a thing, as if they were sitting alone in deep thought. Then Miss Emma coughed twice, short and dry, to let me know that she was on her deathbed. Then silence again. There was smoke in the room, and I must have cleared my throat or something, because my aunt used that moment to speak. "That food waitin',"